You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, this is Jacob Daniel. This is the Daniel 3 podcast, and well, thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it. So tonight I have a special guest, first time on the show, somebody who is running for Region 6 rep on the LNC, and turns out we actually have a fair bit in common, just in terms of our political background and both being Christians, and so. We're going to have a fun conversation tonight, and I'm going to bring him up right now. His name is Joseph Eklund. Joseph, how you doing?
Hey, Jacob. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, man. Pretty good. Can't complain. It's Saturday, with my first day off in a while, and I got to spend it with my kids, which, you know, it's one of those things where while it's going on, it's a little stressful, but, you know, in hindsight, it's it is really nice at the end of the day to, you know, to have that precious one-on-one time with your children, even when they drive you nuts and stuff. I mean, you're not going to get this time back. So I try to make sure I don't take it for granted.
There's an ancient wisdom to the regular chores of life, like taking care of your children. If you're a farmer, taking care of your animals, there's like, let's bring this in. Let's have this regularity and treat it with love. That I think is, it's a beautiful thing. And if we treat it too much, like we're trying to resist it, we actually become sick in our souls. And if we can get over ourselves and treat it, with love, then we grow and it's a lot nicer actually.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, it's in the simple things of life that some of the most meaningful things can happen.
Right.
We're both members of the Mises Caucus and involved in the Libertarian Party. So maybe we should start just by talking a little bit about that, you know, and what brought you into libertarianism and then how you stumbled upon the Mises Caucus and, you know, what it means to you and, you know, why you wanted to get involved.
Yeah. So, if I go straight to libertarianism, that would have to be that same Ron Paul, Rudy Giuliani moment. That was my moment.
I've never heard this story before in my life. I'm good. Right?
yeah, that was it. I was getting into YouTube, starting to watch that, and that's where I found these clips of Ron Paul. And immediately, like, I grew up as a more like soft socialist Democrat, like progressive, but kind of libertarian progressive. You know, they want everybody like classical liberal, but we want to take care of people's health care sort of thing. That was sort of where the community that I was coming from. And then I ended up finding, like, I was in anti-war protests when the Iraq war was starting. You know, we were really calling out the wars and the drug war and all these things with these bad outcomes. And it just seemed like it didn't make sense to me. And then Ron Paul comes up, and he's this Republican. And wait, there's a Republican who's anti-war, anti-drug war, and actually lives a responsible life. And makes me actually have more compassion for the other side of the cultural aisle, which I actually really valued, because it was something of a separation. I was, you know, a little bit in an echo chamber on the left, and I could reach across the aisle to the right side of the cultural sphere and have this uniting political philosophy that it made more sense than the one I already had, which was like, I was a sort of Denis Kucinich guy. And then Ron Paul was like, oh, we can all live, you know, we can have socialism. We can have the conservative, solo families, all these sorts of things. You just don't hurt each other and don't take your stuff. And yeah, man, that's what it all did for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny how simple Ron Paul made it sound. You know what I mean? And yeah. I remember, you know, I was always kind of like a political nerd. So I remember like in high school taking like, you know, econ classes, you know, political classes and stuff like that. And, you know, they always overcomplicated things, right? You know, they're teaching like Keynesian economics and they're teaching their, you know, the government, you know, revisionist history, and then the political views that the educational system tries to impress upon you. It just makes you seem like, oh, wow, this is all so complicated. And oh, thank God we have, you know, these really smart politicians and leaders in our government that can make all these decisions for us.
We need them.
Right. Yeah. And it turns out actually that, no, it's all a bunch of, you know, it's almost like I'm a bit of a Star Trek nerd, and I always so there's a term in Star Trek called what do they call it? Like a technobabble, I think is the phrase, where they to explain the different things that are going on, you know, in the show that are, you know, more of the science fiction variety, but they can't really explain it. So they throw a lot of technobabble at you. You know what I mean? There's just random words that sound really smart, and they're all, you know, kind of smashed together. And, you know, that's kind of what politics is.
That sort of fit together.
Yeah. It's like, that's what like the Washington, D.C. and, you know, it's all political theater, and they try to make it sound like they know what they're talking about, but it's kind of all just made up. And Ron Paul would be asked all these questions, and I always loved the way he would answer them. He'd be like, listen, I don't know. He's like, I really don't know. I just think that it just comes down to, you know, these simple tenets of, like, you know, we shouldn't be dropping bombs on families, and we shouldn't be, you know, telling people how to live their lives. And it's just like, people go like, oh, that's just so simplistic and naive. And it's like, oh, no, actually, it's, you know, naive to think that if you bomb people that they'll just, you know, thank you for raining freedom down upon them or something, like.
Yeah, our idea that, like, you know, the neocons were doing the 4D chess before Trump, you know, like, oh, if we invade this country and hold pressure here, and then they'll become a democracy all of a sudden, and then that will cause this country to suddenly react and become peaceful. And then this country will uprise against their leadership and topple that. It's like, and none of it worked. Sometimes we get up in our heads, human beings, we get up in our heads and we grab onto an idea, and we fall in love with that idea so much that actually, like, our life doesn't have any relationship to it. It's not grounded in reality. And if we would have a little bit of humility and a little bit of actually, yeah, humility, that humbleness that makes you sort of get grounded and be like, oh, actually, I could be wrong. Then these simplistic things, these higher morals that Ron Paul called us to, and now I love how Dave Smith, how he, when he's engaged in these battles that are even on these, you know, super fast clip shows, it's somebody throws something at you, you take it to the higher moral plane. You say, well, you know, what Ron Paul's advertising was so good at this with the anti-war stuff. It's like, what would you do if China was doing this to us? Like, what if they had troops being deployed in Texas? Like, or on the border with Russia, on the border of on the Mexican border. Like, we would have a much different, we would have a reaction that we can understand. If we had a bunch of people in Texas freak out and go and start doing terrorism because China had invaded, like, we would understand it. We might not be like, oh, it's okay to do terrorism, but we would understand. And that same thing where you reach the higher moral plane, you cut through all the manipulations and just say like, hey, what is actually the moral thing here? And then let that guide you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and really reminding people that, like, what government does, what the state does, like, it, you can't, you know, people try to disguise it in these, you know, these narratives and hide behind, like, the euphemisms that we use to describe government actions. But at the end of the day, it's like, we're talking about people doing things to other people,
right?
And bringing it back to, like, you know, like, no, it's not America attacking Iraq. It's American troops and American drones dropping bombs and having an occupying force in the towns of Iraqi or Afghani, you know, men, women, and children who, you know, don't care about America, except that for some reason we keep coming over there and, you know, killing them or you know, ruling over them. And it's like, you know, they hate us for our freedom. It's like, what does that even mean?
it's just
such a silly thing to say.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, there are places in the world where it's really rough. It's not hunky dory, you know, suburb life. There are some real challenges that are really hard for people. And you know, it may be that the soldier on the ground is trying to help people, but the soldiers that come back are the first ones to tell you it's a mess. They don't know what they're trying to do. And you try to do some good things for this family here, and then they die, you know, 6 months later because somebody, you know, used a precision weapon to take out someone else. And it's like,
Yeah. And not only that, but like they don't even know what they're trying to do on a more global stage. Like Scott Horton breaks this down so well, how, like, you know, we went into Iraq so gung-ho and then realized, like, oh, crap, we're actually helping out Iran, which, you know, that's not what we wanted to do. And then, you know, having to try to backtrack and fix that problem. And it's just one thing after another.
These false authorities that project authority when it's not genuine. It's not something that actually commands respect. It's this face of authority that's not really truthful. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm an anarchist, is because I want authority to be earned through a genuine merit. Like,
yes.
Yeah. That's it. I want it to be as easy to say this authority is not the true authority as possible so that I can say yes to legitimate authority. And if that means that there are some human beings that are actually amazing, like prophets that we like choose as our leaders, like I don't have any problem with that. I think that's actually something that could be very beautiful. But if we are meant to by force, you know, elect leaders based on a popularity contest that's basically rigged, we're not going to get good results. We're just going to have a real mess. And these meddlesome affairs in the foreign policy world are very much just a continuation of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so you brought up, but you're an anarchist, and I like the way you put it. Like, you know, you're an anarchist because you want, not because you're against authority, which is, you know, that's something sometimes that I think we're both Christians, and that's something that, you know, if you go to, you know, your average Christian and say you're an anarchist, it's like, oh, but Romans 13 and, you know, all these different passages about authority. And it's like, well, no, I believe in authority, and I believe God ordains certain people to be in authority. But I think that the people that God ordains are the ones that, you know, are who would be competent in it. The ones that, that, you know, like you said, like the way you put it, like people rise to the top through a sort of meritocracy. And, you know, they don't have to a true. And really, I think this is what Jesus taught, right? Like Jesus taught, like what to be a leader is to be a servant. And so the true leaders, true authority doesn't have to be coercive. Rather, people just, you know, elevate you there because they want you there. You've earned that position. What do you think?
We look at Jesus's example, and he basically does not recognize the state's authority. He recognizes the reality of the state's power, but he does not recognize their authority. He doesn't even recognize the Pharisees, the religious orders' authorities. He is going directly to the divine word. And it's through our actual approach to the true spiritual realities, and we see this when we recognize the meaning and merit of other people, what they say, what they do, what Ron Paul did. It spoke to your heart, and you could see, oh, the plain truth of what he's saying in this particular realm of our lives, and Jesus had us go straight to the word itself, go straight to, and once again, the law wasn't what the Pharisees wrote out and how they, you know, did argumentation about it and the legalism of it. It was going to the actual spiritual reality. And so I just find that how we recognize authority, when it becomes fallen, as it always does, humanity always, you know, rushes to when they recognize an order that has that divine truth of the moment, they rush in, they provide resources, they build them up, and they're like, oh yes, finally you brought the temple. And then over time it gets corrupted. They're human, and we can recognize that. And being basically following the legalism of man against the spiritual reality of God's word is always going to lead to bad results. And, you know, it's very difficult. One of the issues with that is always like when it becomes an individual thing where we have to trust our hearts and our understanding and
uh-oh, looks like I lost Joseph.
it's no longer something we can force on people. We actually have to have faith in others and in health. We have to have healthy people that we respect, and we can take their word for things. But if we can't like take this particular church or this particular authority or this particular government and say like they're always right, there's a fear there that, well, what if we don't have authority? But really, that's actually fear that is a lack of faith, because faith shows us that authority always presents itself, but it won't necessarily present itself in the established order of power that man has established in the past. We can perceive the authority ourselves, and when we do, it just sings to our hearts, and we celebrate hallelujah, and we go, and we lift them up, and we have a spiritual revolution of the time, and it creates health and life in human culture. And it's, I think it's the coolest thing in the world, and that our sort of anarchist movement is a flavor of that in a certain area of life.
Oh yeah, I 100% agree, and it's and to me this is it's not like some people will try to obscure, you know, Christian anarchism as like some kind of weird, we're trying to, you know, bring a fringe political ideology and push it onto the Bible. But when I became a political anarchist, when I, you know, started reading Rothbard and got into Tom Woods, Dave Smith and all them, you know, then I started like, okay, well, you know, I wanted to just make sure that like the Bible was compatible with that. Like it, you know, my gut feeling was that the Bible, you know, might ban certain forms of government, but that for the most part, it didn't have any hard stamps on what, you know, it's like, you know, you're a Christian first, and, you know, there's different ways you can try to govern yourselves here, and not, you know, just pick the one that you think is the best. But then I was like, wow, like there's actually a lot in here that, you know, to me actually speaks to the idea of self-governance. I mean, whether we're going back to, you know, the book of Judges and the fact that, you know, there was no king. Then we go to 1 Samuel 8, which is when they introduce a king, and the warning is like the king. It's like, you sure you want this? Because it's not going to go well.
It's going to go badly.
Right. Yeah. And then the entirety of the Old Testament is, you know, this hereditary monarchy that fails over and over again, and they get conquered, and then they repent and come back to God. But it's
every
just,
single
it's
time, just, it's because they drifted away from God, and they let the man-made power become corrupted, and then a new, you know, Isaiah has to, or Ezekiel has to come up and you know, preach to the people, and then they finally like, oh wait, that's actually the right idea, and then and of course they might have to go through a desert for a while or something.
and then Jesus comes, and you know, why is he rejected as Messiah? It's I mean, there's a few reasons there, but one of the reasons is the Jews thought that there was going to be, again, another political savior who would come and overthrow the Romans and usher in a new kingdom, physical kingdom of Israel. And Jesus, what did Jesus say? He's like, no, my kingdom is not of this world.
Right.
He tells
the spiritual authority, not the political authority.
Yeah. Yep. And I love, one of my favorite passages is in, I think, Mark chapter 10. And he's telling his apostles, he's like, you know, listen, the Gentiles love to, you know, and he even uses the word archonist, which is, you know, one of the Greek word for archist. He's like, you know, the Gentiles love to lord and rule and arc over each other. He says, but it shall not be that way among you. And I'm like, they're just so much there. And I'm just like, you know, I was like, and so I became convinced. I was
who said that?
I believe it's Mark chapter 10. Hold on, Mark 10, verse 42, if I remember correctly. Yep. So I'll pull it up here. Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be must first be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man who did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And I'm just like, I don't know. To me, it just seems like we're just reading the text.
You know, and In some ways, I don't have a long history with really working closely with the biblical text. I'm actually somewhat new at doing that.
You seem to have a pretty good understanding of it already, though, I have to say. Like, you're speaking my language.
Yeah. But a lot of it comes from, I'm a student of anthroposophy, which is sort of a spiritual science, which basically recognizes the objective reality of spirituality. And Christianity is part of that. And that the story of what happened in Golgotha is part of this, like, the spiritual reality actually changed, and there's this mystery about how that happened. As the divine God entered into creation, and what does that mean? And it's something that I've been, like, really, it's one of my things that I think about, and what I basically understand is, like, I don't know if you listen to much Jordan Peterson.
Oh, a lot, yeah.
So one of the things he talks about is when you try to not lie and you try to tell the truth, and what happens is that you align with yourself more and more, and
yeah,
and your alignment with yourself also correlates or harmonizes with the good of the world. So that we are the children of God. We are little divine beings. And when we align, we actually harmonize with the grand divine being of the whole cosmos. And that Jesus was one who did that so much that he could be, because when we speak the truth, we're not necessarily just speaking what we want. We're speaking something that's true, that's almost beyond us. That's the divine truth of us. And I think about this, if anybody plays like improvisational music, or even like is an actor or does art, one of the times, sometimes you like are in the zone, and there's something, it's not you that's doing it, it's you're perceiving what the zone is, and you're managing to do it. It's this divine thing, this truth, like, even when you're trying to make an argument and you're like, oh, well, I'm not quite there, because you're actually perceiving something else that's the truth.
Right.
And you're making it. And what I see this as being, as we are slaves and servants of the divine, we incarnate the spiritual true world. We make heaven incarnate into earth. We actually bring the true, good, and beautiful more and more into the earthly life, and we redeem the fallen earth. And Jesus basically was of such pure heart and so inspired by the divine spirit that the actual, like, Godhead itself spoke through his life for 3 years. And he was the ultimate servant of the divine world. The master is the servant, serving the world, serving all of the people who follow him. And it's this just this amazing, beautiful thing. And it's like, it's so profoundly moving that is the nature of our reality. And it proves to me that God is love. Like, that's how it works.
Yes.
Holy
yeah.
crap.
Yeah. No, 100%. And Jordan Peterson is, the way he comes at the Bible does bring like a fresh life and perspective to the scriptures. I'm not really a fundamentalist, but I'm someone who would take the Bible, you know, and believe it on a more spiritual level, metaphysical level. But you know, it appeals to me, but it can also appeal to somebody who doesn't believe in the metaphysical yeah. statements of the Bible. But to me, it's like, you know, whether or not those stories are true or not, the psychological truths that are there are just so profound that, I mean, I don't know how you can't at least just stand in all of them. I mean, it's a little, you know, to me, and to me, there's like almost no bottom, you know, especially when you, I mean, there's so much, and there's so much in the Bible that has parallels to like the struggles that we're going through as a society today. You know what I mean? Like, you know, hearkening back to like, you know, this fight against authoritarianism and stuff. I mean, you know, and you know, there's something about the Mises Caucus and it's almost, it shouldn't be surprising to me that the Mises Caucus has this element to it. Cause Michael Heiss, the founder, is a fellow Jordan Peterson fan. Yeah. So, you know, he's probably unconsciously had that influence on it. But to me,
I've had some good spiritual conversations with Michael. It's
There's something about the Mises Caucus that seems to me almost to be, you know, like it's almost, I'm trying to figure out the right words here for this. The Mises Caucus is almost essentially not just a force that's fighting for liberty, but it's a force that is basically doing that which Jesus taught us to do, which is to pursue freedom by telling the truth. You know what I mean? Like there's something so like, it's simple, and it seems like it would take, you know, again, like, you know, people like to complicate it and make it seem like, you know, things are harder than they actually are, but really like, no, like if you're telling the truth, you're properly orienting yourself with reality, and then you will act in a way which brings life and peace to you and your family and your community and to society. But when you act out of lies, when you distort reality, then everything goes to hell. And that's exactly what's happened in our society. And to me, like, you know, Tom Woods, Dave Smith, Scott Horton, you know, and those of us in the Mises Caucus, like everything we're trying to do and the different ways we're trying to do it, like we're trying to bring society back to harmony by just telling the truth, by just saying we have to come back and recognize, you know, where we've fallen off and get back to, you know, doing what, you know, the tradition that Jesus taught and that, you know, Western society, you know, the good things that came out of it, that's where it came from.
Right. So this, oh man, I'm so enjoying this because I really love the cross section of these two worlds, the libertarian movement and the biblical work. And one of the things that spoke to me out of what you said was, do you know Jonathan Pageau?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a sort of, when he was speaking, he revealed something to me, which was when Judas criticized the anointment with oil. So when the women are putting precious oils on Jesus and Judas criticizes this, Jesus says that essentially you need to get your priorities straight. There's having, you know, fixing social problems, you know, worrying about inequality and the poor and stuff. First, you have to recognize the divine and the king. You have to put the top value at the top of the hierarchy. So Jesus being this being of living God's word into life and being this example, and he, you know, he's the priority. And so when you spoke about how do you affect change, you tell the truth, you speak the true divine word into existence. And from there, you trust the results, and people can recognize it. It calls to their inner higher moral force. They're just like, they're moved. Like, this is the truth. This is the moral thing. And it's in the right place. It's at the top of our values. And at the same time, you had the other disciples who wanted to fight, who wanted to ride into Jerusalem and and take up arms. And Jesus is like, this is not the way.
Right.
And it's almost like this left and right pole of trying to fix society or save society or anything like that. It's doing machinations in the service of the topic instead of just speaking the truth and keeping your eye on the ball as far as like what you're serving.
Yeah. Well, so the story that came to mind when you were saying that is, and this might've been what you were maybe partially referencing. I don't know, but I think of, Peter and Jesus in the garden before Jesus is taken into custody. And, you know, Peter cuts off the ear of the high priest and they're ready to fight off the entirety of the, the Jewish authority to keep Jesus from being captured. And Jesus rebukes Peter and says, you know, if you live by the sword, you will die by the sword. And will I not take the cup that the Father has given to me? I mean, and there's a lot in that passage, and right. some people take it as like a refutation of violence entirely, and that Jesus was kind of preaching a pacifist message there. There might be something to that, but I think it's deeper than that. I think what Jesus was rebuking wasn't so much the use of violence or defense, but rather a lack of, I think a lack of faith.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, try to figure out the right words here, a unwillingness to relinquish control as well. Peter in that moment was not acting in faith. He was acting with the impulse that he needed to, if he needed to do this by force, he was going to. He needed to control the outcome.
Right.
He wasn't trusting the divine to let things play out as they were supposed to. He's like, no, they need to play out the way that I deem they have to. And isn't
an idea of how it's supposed to work? And like, you're supposed to be the king, and
yeah. Like... And it's like, isn't that such a parallel to the pitfalls and like the logical pitfall of statism and why people fall into it in the first place. It's this, it's this lack of faith in the divine to work things out. It's like they're when you're confronted with the chaos that just normally arises when things start to go astray, instead of trying to let things play out, trusting that telling the truth and that doing the right thing will lead to long-term peace. Rather, what if you act like Peter, and that's what statism is, you're like, no, I need to use by any means necessary, including violence and coercion, I need to have control over what's going to happen. And it is that obsession with control, I think, that really poisons people's hearts and minds, because I mean that's exactly where, you know, like a lot of the problems we have today, and like, you know, there's a lot of people that like they don't actually want the government to go and do a lot of the evil things that the government does, but the issue is they will continually justify the state's existence because they need the state to control like the one or two things that they really care about the most. Whether that's my fellow Christians on the right who are like, well, we need a state to, you know, crack down on all these, you know, degenerate people and, you know, not let them live their sinful lifestyles and stuff and all that, you know, or whether it's the left and it's like, no, we need the state to, you know, enforce all of our social, you know, values and preferences and you know, and to, you know, provide some sort of equity in the market and stuff.
When did Jesus ever do that? When did Jesus say they don't live you know, lives of they don't live honorable lives, we better force them to. It's like, no,
right.
He said, you know, you know, come and follow me. That's right. It.
And it's like, instead of, you know, what Jesus did when he was confronting people's sin, he didn't attack them. He didn't use coercion. Rather, he just called them to repentance. And you know what? A lot of times they did, and it didn't take coercion. He inspired them to repent from their sinful ways and to turn towards righteousness. And that's what the church is supposed to do. And unfortunately, the church has really missed the mark on this. And honestly, I think that, you know, especially when the church misses the mark, that and when the church itself is calling for statism, well, that is such a warping of the natural order that I don't know if I would blame the church for the predicament we're in, but to me, the church has to be serving its proper role for things to work. To, you know, they have to be part of the solution at the very least. And so, you know, that's kind of what, you know, inspired me to the whole that. So that's basically the genesis of this podcast, was me saying, like, the church needs to, you know, get back onto the path of truth and what we're supposed to be doing, you know, and you know, that plays a part in restoring things back to the natural order. And but yeah, I think the Mises Caucus and the Libertarian Party, I think, have an important role in that too. You know, promoting decentralization, you know, getting the ideas of Rothbard and Mises out there and stuff. And really, it really, you know, when I first, so I got into Jordan Peterson first, but then when I went from Jordan Peterson to Mises and Human Action and Praxeology, man, that was such a mind bomb, because they work together so perfectly. And you know, the idea that, like, Jordan Peterson talks about a lot, which is like, you know, set your house in order, right? Clean your room and take, you know, life is not about temporary happiness, but rather the pursuit of meaning by taking on maximal responsibility for yourself. You know, that kind of can naturally follow through to then having a conversation with people about, you know, human action and praxeology. Because it's like, you know, and sometimes people can be like, well, what, you know, economics can seem like this really abstract thing. And I'm like, no, economics is kind of like what Mises, I think, was saying. It's like, it's everything. It's like everything we do is sort of the foundation, and our actions, you know, like you know, it's not what Keynesians say the economy is. It's not like looking at it at this end result level and tracking spending and messing with the money and interest rates and all that. Like, no, it starts at the individual.
Yeah. it's this idea that went along with materialism, that humans are machines. If humans are meat puppets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if humans are machines, then you arrange machines in a certain way, you'll get a certain result. And like, I think that that's actually how, because when you think about social engineering, that's how the thinking is. It's like, if we do this, the people will do this, and it's not treating them as divine creative beings. It's like, if they're divine creative beings, then you give them their sovereign authority, and you have faith that, you know, they will follow Christ, and then heaven will, you know, in their life, heaven will be more incarnated into the earth, or they won't. And we're going to have to take responsibility for how that affects us. And, you know, there's limits to that. And that's one of the reasons why I think the non-aggression principle is a great political principle. It seems like the best principle when it comes to the use of violence. But you know, in that way, it's mainly, you know, not that it prevents harm, but it's actually honoring the sovereignty of the perpetrator's actions. It's like, they have responsibility for this, and therefore, you know, we won't just allow them to keep on incurring more debt. We are not going to participate in that. We are going to stop them. And it's not like we're doing this just for us. No, we're doing this also for you, because we honor the fact that you are responsible for your actions.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, if you don't, and to me, it's like, you know, if you don't start with self-ownership, you know, that's, again, another distortion of the truth. And it's like, because I don't think you can even define morality, and you can't define like you can't define reality correctly if you're not starting at the individual. It'd be right. like trying to do science, but denying the denying the sort of, I guess, like sovereignty or the prevalence of atoms. You know what I mean? Like, you know, how are you going to do chemistry if you're not, like, you know, starting out with a fundamental understanding of, like, you know, atoms and electrons and protons and their reactions and, like, you know, and like the general principles there. It's like, well, you know, in the same way that atoms are sort of like the fundamental blocks of chemistry, you know, individuals are the fundamental blocks of society. And you kind of have to start on that level.
Better than atoms, it would be math. It'd be like denying math itself. And then people are trying to do all these, like, you know, they're saying the orbit of the planets is doing these weird loopy things. They're like, no, this isn't working. This doesn't add up. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right. No, I mean, I think that's a good analogy too. It's like you can't, or even like, you know, it's sort of what kind of reminds me a little bit of what argumentation ethics is. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, well, how can you even engage in the world and disagree with somebody or talk to somebody without implicitly, like, you know, acknowledging self-ownership? Like, yep. you just can't. It's like, so if you know, attempts to refute self-ownership demonstrate self-ownership, and you're now engaging in a you know, walking contradiction.
Well, it's funny, getting where Hoppe got argumentation ethics from had a bunch of, like, weird confusions in it that he resolved and came to anarcho-libertarian conclusions. And it was that if you're having an argument with someone, then you recognize that they need to live and therefore they need a bunch of resources. And it was this yes, they have the right to acquire their resources in order to live, but they don't have a right to other people's resources.
Right. Yeah. And, yep. Could that be self-refuting? I mean, it wouldn't be doable. So I guess in the last, you know, like 10 minutes or so we have here, you know, let's talk a little bit. Yeah.
We just wandered all over.
I know.
It's great.
No, it was. I'll have to have you back on sometime to maybe do a little deeper dive onto some of those subjects, because we could take a couple of those and do a whole episode on them.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, you're running for the rep of Region 6. So, you know, maybe talk a little bit about, like, what you've already done in the party and the caucus and what's going on. I think you're in Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so, Southwestern Wisconsin. I'm an at-large in the state party. I was called called to the Mises Caucus by Scott Horton and Dave Smith and Tom Woods. They put out the call. I was like, okay, I'm joining. Let's make the Ron Paul Revolution and bring it into the party. And so that's when I was a delegate to Orlando 2 years ago, and then I joined the XCOM of the Wisconsin party last year. And right before that, actually, there was no affiliate anywhere near me in Wisconsin. And there was, like, you know, because to Wisconsin, if you look at your hand and sort of stick your thumb out, and Green Bay's on your thumb and Milwaukee's sort of on the fleshy part of your palm, and then Madison's in the middle. I'm off on the other side where it's basically rural and all the hills are as you go into Iowa. And there was nothing out there, nothing from basically Madison westward. And so I started an affiliate and started it with, like, six counties, my county and all the counties that connected to it, just so, like, we could turn it gold. And I'm connected with a number of libertarians, but I have to say that having it be that big has its challenges. And my goal is to have all those counties split off and become their own affiliates. And I've got one that's probably going to happen this year, and another one that might happen. But anyway, so I've been part of the state party, and I want to participate in this reset. And it's not just from what I've done with the state party, but also what I do in my work. I connect with farms that sell direct and avoid the state. It's
right,
basically
yeah. What's that called again?
Farm Match.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So it's a website that connects people to direct selling farms, and it's basically this method to overcome the agricultural chemical welfare farm state. Like the right. What's going on? The reason why Fork? I just saw somebody on the Libertarian Party Wisconsin discussion board on Facebook was posting an AOC clip. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Yeah. Was talking about, and what she said, spot on. She was interrogating them about the four largest meat processing companies and how much protection and how it's not a free market. Absolutely correct. And she just wants to treat symptoms, whereas we want to actually cure the disease, which is protectionism.
Oh yeah.
So
people don't realize how much that the food, like the food industry, is almost. Like it's almost awesome. Entirely centrally planned.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't even come.
Like the nutrient density of the food has diminished. There have been great economics articles about the.
Joseph's ascending into heaven again.
that inflation doesn't just depreciate the money, it depreciates our food. That actual vegetables have lost flavor and richness, and that's why you go to the farmer's market and buy the extra expensive. That just used to be normal, but the way that they raise food now is just it's over toxified. They've depleted the soil, and therefore people don't have the nutrients that they need to actually fight disease, which also helps the pharmaceutical companies that are in on this.
Yeah.
And the gig goes on from there.
Yeah, and I get so frustrated with other people who are supposedly libertarians and just, you know, have this blind faith for the pharmaceutical companies and just like, and I was like, you don't like, to me, it's just like, I avoid the doctor like a plague, because it's just, I know. And to me, this is also very biblical and a whole other thing, but just like, you know, for the most part, I think that we're supposed to treat illness in our bodies through natural means. And it almost entirely starts by the food we put in our mouth and stuff. But yeah, the government has done, the American people, and plus other, you know, people living in other countries, no favor with the way that we get our food. I mean, what's the last time, like, I don't think you can go into most grocery stores and buy food that came from a farm, even in your own state. Like, most of the produce is shipped in from South America sometimes I've seen things that come from, I forget what was it. Was it? I think kiwis mostly come from France or something. Just like weird things. It's just like why it just doesn't make sense to me. And then the more
even how the grocery store is oriented and the products that are available in it have been shaped by agricultural policy. That the USDA basically invented the food pyramid, and it was never based on science. And the nutrition tables that they used, all of that was never based on science. One person had a theory and they came up with a paper. It's been completely refuted since, but it reigned supreme for decades and shaped our whole agricultural subsidy mechanism. And then from there, we went to post-World War II chemistry in order to fertilize everything, which has actually depleted the topsoil and been completely unsustainable. So I could go on a rant about this for quite a while too, but essentially I felt like, I talked to Joel Salatin. If you don't know Joel Salatin, he is the most famous libertarian farmer. He is a renegade farmer. He wrote the book, Everything I Want to Do is Illegal. And he basically, he featured on Food Inc., the documentary about how corrupt and poisonous the food industry is. And he basically, like, he runs a farm that is completely self-integrated, and he teaches people how to farm in such a way that they actually incorporate all their waste products and actually make the soil healthier and incorporate and basically have positive externalities instead of negative externalities. And it's essentially applying libertarian principles to the farm. It's like, don't poison your neighbor's property. Don't have genetic drift. And he was, I talked to him about being in the Libertarian Party, and he said that he had tried to be more active in the national LP, and that he was essentially kind of pushed out by these people who are the corporate apologists, who are saying that basically the Dow chemical and all these Monsanto Bear and all this, that they're private companies and basically apologizing for them. And
private company, bro.
Dude, libertarianism isn't, it's a private company, you can do what you want. It's property rights and the protection of innocence.
Corporations are not free market entities. Like, I don't know why this is so hard for some libertarians to understand. Like, corporations are government issued entities that are like these fictitious persons. You know what I mean? It's like there's nothing. Like, I'm not saying there wouldn't be big businesses in an actual anarcho-capitalist, you know, society, but like to conflate these giant corporations that are in bed with government with private actors is just
it's just another example of false authority that these farms that are using practices that hurt the environment around them and hurt their neighbors and ruin the air. If you've been in some of these places where they're spraying the noxious fertilizer that they use, you get headaches and it's basically very unpleasant. Whereas actually, if you use, you know, Joel Salatin, there are other modalities that are as responsible as his, but basically he uses the products of the animals that he uses from his farm and brings them in a way that actually incorporates it in the soil and builds the topsoil back up, which basically depleted, which is the reason why we have to use chemicals on our soil, because it doesn't have the top. Go ahead.
Is that like regenerative farming, basically?
Yes,
what he's talking? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That you're regenerating the soil, which is actually, it pulls carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. I'm not a huge, climate change freak out person, but if you actually want to address this, you don't kill off, you don't start more monocrop soybeans and wheat and corn. You actually have regenerative agriculture. You bring a rotational grazing of ruminant animals, which builds up the soil, greenifies the deserts, and actually you can use more land and more nutrients per acre in areas where you can't even use a plow. Like, this is a major solution to our problems, and it doesn't need any subsidy. It just needs the government to stop subsidizing the poison. That's what we need. We just need to speak the truth and stop telling lies, and this will work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many.
I want to bring that place. You know, I'm from the northern Midwest. There's lots of small farms that and lots of agriculture that needs representation of what is the solution. I was talking to a regular conventional grain distributor, and he was talking, he knows all this, but he's stuck because their whole system is stuck in the welfare agricultural chemical complex. It's all gone. And we need to actually have solutions that bring people out. And so I'm bringing this voice to the LNC on this issue, because there's people with, we span a lot of the different issues. I also want to focus on making sure that members or that newly inspired libertarians or people who've been out in the cold, that they have easy venues for being engaged, that they, that it's really well communicated from the party's perspective. Hey, if you love, you know, if you're going to nerd out about libertarian philosophy, here's where you should go. If you want to become a candidate, here's all the things you need. Here's a go-to, like the whole manual, everything. You just fill in the blank. You become a candidate in a box. All those things should be super easy so that somebody who's like, oh my gosh, this is the truth. I'm in love. I want to change the world, that we can immediately be like, oh, you want to change the world? Here, that's how you change the world. Do it in your county, and we'll start from the bottom up. We'll bring community authority back where it's actually a relationship between human beings at the local level, as opposed to some far-off authority king. So that's what we're going to do at the Libertarian Party. The Mises Caucus is our vessel to go speak truth to power. We're going to ride this wave. We're going to take it over. We're going to have the whole liberty movement finally have a vessel for political action that is worthy of it. Hopefully, yes. If we can do our job right, we have to stay humble. We have, you know, that whole corruption thing. We are right now the springboard, the enthusiast. We see the spirit. We are inspired. We're going to have to do our best to not become corrupted, but we're not kings. We're not entitled to being your leaders, but we are ready to do this. So come on, let's go.
Amen, man. Well, now I have two episodes that I need to bring you back on. We got to talk about food more, and we got to talk about Jordan Peterson and Christianity a little bit more too, because those could be two great conversations. And
Rudolf Steiner, which will be very interesting, because that's he's really what I got into spiritual stuff.
Yeah,
and he's less known.
And the food stuff. I mean, like, I actually really quickly here. I actually used to be a vegan. I actually used to. 2015 me was a leftist Bernie Sanders vegan, and so I've come a long way. But yeah, I was actually kind of looking into all the stuff. So first I looked, I started to realize how veganism was environmentally unsustainable. But then that opened my eyes to all of the like government monopoly and interventionism that you were talking about and that you've become aware of. And so, you know, that, yeah. I mean, just how much of our farming is just growing corn for all the different things, corn and soybean, for all the different things that we use corn and soybean for, that's not even food. Yeah. And it's just such a waste.
It's a wasteland of one plant.
Right.
The birds don't have a place to live, man. Like, it's so destructive. Oh, man.
Yeah. No, it's awful. So we'll definitely have to talk about that more as well. And I need to, what's the website again? Farm.
It's farmmatch.com. And I'm going to talk to you some time about giving you an affiliate link, because we would love to reward other people in the Liberty Movement for participating in the decentralization of the food system. We want farms to directly, essentially, a whole network of farms, because this is what Farm Match does, is we have a platform where all these different farms who sell direct all can have one marketing arm. And that way, basically, we can have a decentralized affiliate network of all the podcasters, all the food freedom activists, the libertarians who are passionate about these things, can get directly funded by the farms themselves.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, definitely. I'm really interested in doing that, because I'm tired of buying my food from the grocery store that at this point doesn't even have half the crap I'm looking for anyway, and what they have is complete garbage. So there's no incentive to continue in that. So cool, man. Well, hey, thanks for coming on. It was a great conversation. I'm excited for what we're about to do in Reno, and you know what we're about to do with the LP, and you know, take it into the, you know, its next iteration that, like you said, you know, start speaking truth to power, and you know, being that nexus for all things liberty and decentralization, and you know, reclaiming, you know, individual and local sovereignty. So I'm excited. You know, I'm so excited and encouraged that there's so many people like you that I get to encounter in this movement that we've all joined into, because, you know, it helps to make me a better person, helps to make me more informed. And you know, we're all, I mean, it sounds cliche, but like we're all in this together. Like we're not, you know, yeah. like 3 years ago it was like, you know, oh my gosh, it's just, you know, like what can we do against this giant satanic beast that is the state? And, you know, of course we still have a long ways to go, but I'm so much more white pilled now than I was. It's like, even though the tyranny's gotten worse, I continue to get more white pilled because I just, you know, I feel that, I mean, you know, what's that saying? The night is darkest just before the dawn. Like, I feel like, you know, we could be part of something that, you know, that starts to turn the ship around, that starts to wake people up and can usher in what comes next. So, you know,
well, so in Reno, right?
I can't make it to Reno, unfortunately, my wife's giving birth that week.
Right. Put the right thing at the top of the hierarchy. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it literally was like, I mean, and that hierarchy literally is like wife and Reno. And I was like, I was like trying to convince my wife. I was like, you know, what if you gave birth in Reno? I mean, you know, it wouldn't be that bad. she didn't go
amazing.
For it.
Oh, that's so funny. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Well,
but I will be,
we'll
there
do our best spirit. Without you.
Yeah. No, I will be there in spirit and you know,
in between you'll be watching the live stream.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that'll go well in the hospital room. like what are you doing? Are you giving people updates? Like yeah, that's what I'm not. So, yeah. All right, man. Well, hey, all thanks right, for Jim. Coming on, and thanks everybody for watching, and everyone enjoy the rest of your nights.
Thank you, Jim.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.